Happy Father's Day today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, a bill in the California legislature mandates all those fees we love must be included in advertised room rates. Plus, we tell you the worst airports for delays and the funnest states to travel to this summer.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 3:20, we talk about babies on planes. That should be an interesting topic.
Aren't you cohabitating with a wee grandchild these days?
I certainly am.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what you have to say about tips for handling an unhappy baby on a plane. At 3:35, Clayton Whitehead joins us to talk about international travel. What's driving it now, and what does he see for the future?
At 3:50, Mark talks credit cards, travel awards, and tipping.
And then the travel guys are done. But first, all that cool stuff we just mentioned on today's edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Hey there. Hi, my friends. Welcome again to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys with Tom Romano and Mark Hoffman, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Happy Father's Day, all. We managed to do it again. We seem to show up every Father's Day and most every Mother's Day, live and in radio person.
Isn't that amazing, Mark? We compete with holidays from time to time, and of course Mother's and Father's Day. Every year there is a, if you are a Northern California baseball fan, there is a definite Father's Day present coming your way, as the Giants have beaten and then manhandled and now are manhandling again the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. So if you're a Giants fan and you're a father, why, then that's probably about as good of a sports Father's Day present as you could get. But yes, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And to all those of you who can't be with your father today, why, make sure you shoot him a text or a phone call or something like that that reminds him that you're thinking of him.
You know, I was out and about last evening and had some Giants gear on and ran across several people who did. And that's not unusual. But generally speaking, there isn't a lot of, you know, high-fiving and conversation between Giants fans and over the last year or so, but yesterday the smile on all the Giants fans' faces as a result of how well they're playing and how badly they were beating the Dodgers was evident.
If you're not a baseball fan, then you might not know that yesterday the Giants handed the Dodgers their third worst loss in the history of Dodger Stadium, which dates back to the late 50s, 15-0. Oh my goodness. And it's going better for the Dodgers today, but not as well as they would probably like it. So anyhow, this is a travel program. We sometimes veer off course occasionally into the baseball world, especially at this time of the year. We apologize for that.
All right. Well, that's why some time ago we added entertainment to the Travel Guys. So because we're the
exactly.
Travel and Entertainment Guys. And it wasn't like an intention so that we can just like talk about anything that has to do with entertainment. There was a bigger purpose, and that is that when you travel, you generally travel someplace for the purpose of entertainment, whether yep. it's to see a show, a concert, you're going to New York, Broadway. So, you know, we feature a lot of entertainment-wise stuff. So a little baseball talk is not going to hurt anything. We did that during the basketball season as well. All right, well, let's get on with it. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And with the latest travel news, here's Mark.
We talk a lot about resort and other bogus fees that hotels and airlines and the like to charge. A California state senator, Mark Berman from Menlo Park, has stepped forward with a bill that would mandate that all fees that appear on that first page where the hotel price is. So if the hotel price is $200, and at the end of the day, once the resort fees and everything are added, the price is $250, that $250 price is the price that has to go on the homepage, so that when you're shopping, that you can make comparisons based on what these folks are going to try to hit you up for when you get there, or they're hoping you don't find out about, or you don't see, or it doesn't show up until you're all ready to make the reservation, and then the $35 a night resort fee pops up and you say, what the heck is this? And by then you're like, you just give in, which is what they're hoping for. So a California state senator has introduced the first in the nation bill of its kind. So we'll follow this. In fact, the lady who wrote the story for Travelers United, Lauren White, will be a guest on this program next week to talk about this. Man, it would be nice, because here's what's going to happen. If you force these people to put all of the pricing on the home on right up front and divulge the full price up front, one of the reasons they do this is because by calling it a resort fee or a destination fee, an amenity fee, it puts that money in a different tax pile bundle, and it's taxed very differently than their other revenue. So this is a huge advantage to the hotel, attraction, restaurant, whoever is airline, whoever is charging you this bogus fee. So it's not likely, if they were forced to reveal them up front, it's not likely that they would hang on to those fees. They would either increase the rate of their the price of their product to reflect that and just forget about calling it a fee, or they might drop it entirely in order to be competitive with other hotels, airlines, etc. So that's kind of what we're all hoping for as consumers.
Well, recently I made some phone calls looking for hotel reservations. A place I was calling, which will remain nameless, was offering a discount, offering you the weekday discount, 30% off, or pay no resort fee. So you got a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the resort fee was actually way more than the 30% they were going to give you off for that weekday cheap rate. So, and in the conversation, I asked the gal that was doing the booking, you know, I mentioned that, you know, what I did and the travel guys and how we're big campaigners for resort fees being revealed up front. And her comment was, well, you know, if they start revealing them up front or whatever, it's still going to be there. They're still going to charge you more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to go away. You'll just know what you're going to pay before you pay it.
Remember, that's the company line. So that's what they're telling lawmakers and stuff, is that no matter how we display this, it's still going to be the same price. And I call BS on that, because I don't think that's what will happen all the way across the board. And if it does, it's part of a free marketplace. And while I'm not crazy about the higher price, I don't have a problem with that. What I have the problem with is people surprising me on the last screen and saying, all right, so now it's going to be $20 more, or $30 more, or $40 more. And then I want to know what I get for it. And if I'm getting two bottles of water and free phone calls and admission to the gym, then I call bogus on that too.
Absolutely.
So, and I think what's happening perhaps in states like California is that more people are saying this is BS, and so we're calling people on it. So hopefully our legislators can, and if it turns out unlike what I'm talking about and all of them leave the resort fees in, then I was wrong. But I don't think that is what will happen. Here's a really interesting article from Travel Pulse. Should there be a crackdown on airport bars? Doesn't this seem like a complete no-brainer to you? If you've got people getting on airplanes and making fools of themselves, causing scenes that perhaps put other people's lives in danger, wouldn't you have a little bit better monitoring of airport bars to make sure that people weren't getting completely tanked before they – I mean, wouldn't you tell a bar, look, you can only serve somebody – X amount of alcoholic beverages or something like that?
They need to be responsible. They need to be seriously responsible when they're serving at the airports. We want to believe that they are.
Yeah, but perhaps not. And perhaps if there was some regulation there, this would be a tough thing to put on bartenders and the like. But heck, you know, bartenders in regular bars have some responsibility for not over-serving their patrons. It would seem like in an airport it would be the same way. Anyway, I just thought that Rick Tomaselli kind of hit the nail on the head with a little editorial there. Yes, Thomas.
Did you read the latest Elliott Confidential, where he was talking about how people's behavior on airplanes would be much better if they dressed up?
I found that interesting. Nice. Yeah, that was today. I stuck that in the Ask Chris next time you talk to him, Pyle.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people who work on airplanes say the problems never come from people who are well-dressed. The problems come by people who look like they just got out of bed. And that refers – and that goes back to my bar issue of, right. you know, of coming to the airport, packing in three or four and getting on the plane and making a belligerent idiot of yourself because you don't know how to act in public. All right. We got a lot of things to cover here. U.S. international air traffic continues to rise. May to May 22 to 23, traffic is up 24% more people flying on international flights. There's a thing in Washington, D.C. at Reagan Airport, Tom, called the perimeter rule. It was created a long time ago when Dulles Airport was built in order to protect the new airport because they felt that with the new airport being way out in the suburbs and there not being a lot of development near it, that people wouldn't use it. So they enacted a rule that said planes could only come from a certain distance and go to National Airport in downtown D.C. The law has been same law, type of law, was put in at Love Field in Dallas. And when Southwest moved in there. So it's they are now considering, because Dulles Airport doesn't need that protection anymore, they are now considering getting rid of the perimeter rule in downtown Washington. That would, however, people say, well, gee, that'd be great to be able to fly into Washington, but suddenly every city in the country would want to nonstop into that airport, and I'm not sure how that would all work, but it's interesting. It's the only airport in the country now with what is called a perimeter rule. Did you hear the one about the Argentinian airline flight attendant? She's accused of calling in a bomb threat on a U.S.-bound flight because her ex-boyfriend and his new girlfriend were working together on the flight. Oh, she couldn't bear the thought of them being together, so she called in a bomb. Yeah, this is a real story. She called in a bomb threat. That's yeah, exactly. Chris Elliott has a warning out. Beware of forced car rental upgrades this summer. Chris says that companies are going to be short on cars when we hit the peak of summer travel. And what is happening to some folks is they're arriving at a site being told, hey, the Corolla that you had is not available, but we have this SUV and we won't charge you any extra for it. And now you get the SUV and when you bring it back, you find they've charged you for an SUV. And the person who's checking you in says, I don't know anything about, you know, switching cars and having a good price. So if you switch a car, Chris's recommendation is that you get a receipt from them showing that you're being charged the same price as the car you had originally requested. I would agree that is a pretty darn good idea. What are the most fun states to travel in this summer? What do you think? This is our friends at Wallet Hub who use some kind of different criteria sometimes to figure these things out. What do you think the number one state in the country is to go to?
Did you say safest or funnest?
No, funnest.
Funnest, is that even a word?
No, it's not, but I invented it. Funny you would say funnest, that. The spell checker didn't like it either.
The funnest state to fly in. I don't know. I'm gonna go with Florida.
Florida, yeah. Well, Florida is number two. You live in the funnest state in the country.
Oh, sure. Fun till the... Daddy took his T-Bird
Daddy
away.
Takes
California, huh?
Till Daddy takes the T-Bird away. Yes, and worst airports for delays in the country, New York LaGuardia are up there, but San Francisco is one you want to avoid. We don't have many people who fly to San Francisco. On the icky list that you're most likely to run into in Sacramento, Dallas-Fort Worth. So if you're flying American Airlines, or Delta does a lot of business down there too, if you're flying a flight that goes through Dallas-Fort Worth, particularly if it's late in the day, your chances of misconnecting or being seriously delayed are really quite heavy. If you have to use Dallas, try to get through there as early in the day as you possibly can. Same thing with San Francisco. If you're flying down there to connect to a flight to Hawaii or someplace overseas or something like that, try to take that early morning 6-something flight and get down to the city and be on your way earlier. Southwest Airlines is offering 2x rapid rewards points for a 3-day limited period of time. Guess what? Today is the last day. If you're thinking about buying a Southwest Airlines ticket, if you sign up for the promotion today and buy your ticket before midnight and fly before the 1st of November, you will get double points on your flight. And that is your travel news for today.
And Mark and Tom with you. We are the Travel Guys. Don't forget, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Our Smarter Traveler segment is next. We talk about not snakes on planes, but babies on planes. That's next here on the Travel Guys. Before, available here on the radio, also in iHeartRadio everywhere. Podcasts available at TravelGuysRadio.com as well as iHeartRadio. All right, Mark, let's talk about babies on planes. Why am I doing that?
I thought the bumper music was kind of appropriate there, because it sort of kind of sounds like, good job, Luis. It sounded like a baby, you know. I mean, I just thought that was, you know, kind of cool. Anyways, we're going to talk a little bit about babies on airplanes. If you fly a lot, then you know that one of the worst things that can happen when you get on an airplane and you're settling into your seat is to hear the cries of a little one who is close enough for you to know that, oh, my God, the next 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, fill in the blank, may not be all that wonderful and pleasant. And, you know, babies can fly, too. I mean, there's no rule that says babies can't fly, and lots of babies are better behaved than some adults. So this is, yeah, I mean, this is not a lock thing, but there are some do's and don'ts when you get on the plane and you're confronted with this situation. And if you're a veteran traveler, you know, be on the right side of this. There's no reason, being on the wrong side of it is probably not going to help the situation at all. It's just going to make you look like an idiot. And so pick the right side. So this wonderful lady, Hannah Sampson from the Washington Post, wrote an article. She quotes Celine Brewer, who is the owner of a website, Baby Can Travel. So she started the website after she was traveling with her baby boy and had some negative reactions on planes and stuff like that. And she thought that this might be a way to at least make this an open discussion. And she offers some interesting tips for mothers in particular, and perhaps a few fathers, of things that you might be able to do to try to mitigate the circumstances. First of all, she suggests changing the baby's diaper as close to departure time as possible. Closing that window down where the baby might have a soiled diaper. I thought that was a modern part of genius.
Yep, a great start.
Yeah, soggy diaper might mean tears. And airline lavatories are notoriously small, so trying to change the kid's diaper before getting on the plane, especially for short flights, is a really great idea. Some passengers suggest a small dosage of Benadryl, which tends to be something that causes people to be drowsy for babies. Some people have said that that works. Some people say that doctors say that a small percentage of children, it has an opposite effect, tends to make them more hyper instead of less hyper. Every doctor in this article that was quoted, and one that I asked personally for an opinion, said be really careful with that. Babies are really small, and dosages would need to be – talk to your doctor before you do something like that. Also, pacifier, you're going to have changes in altitude going up and going and coming down. So a pacifier can sometimes – help mitigate some of the crying and screaming that sometimes comes with those changes in altitude.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was particularly a good suggestion. And then here are some things for fellow flyers, because, you know, you would think there's not anything you can do to make this situation better or worse. The baby's going to cry or it's not going to cry, and mom's there, and if she can't make the baby shut up, why then you're probably not going to have any success. But let's just pretend for a minute you're sitting across from somebody on a plane, and you can see that the mother is having a hard time. Maybe you could just lean over a little bit and say, is there anything I could do to help you? Can I give you a hand in any way? Is there anything? Or you see mom struggling with a diaper bag or some other accoutrement that's come with the baby, and just offering to help. This lady on her website says, just makes all the difference in the world. Plus, it sends a message to the other passengers that not everybody is on the same side here. That some people would that perhaps helping mom a little bit might help the baby behave better. Another passenger had just what I think is like the greatest idea I've ever heard of. She carries in a small plastic bag in her carry-on bag a squeeze toy. And when she's in that situation, she takes the toy out of her carry-on bag. Now, the reason she puts it in a plastic bag is because it keeps it a little bit more sanitary. And she can squeeze it in front of the baby. And she said, you would be surprised how many times a screaming kid on a plane has stopped screaming because I had this stupid little toy in a bag and pulled it out and gave it a couple, three squeezes, and it distracted the child and changed the entire situation. And she said, and the look on mothers' faces when you do that is just like you're an angel who has fallen out of the sky. So I thought that was really A1 idea of, in fact, I intend to find a small squeeze toy and put it in my carry-on bag. I got a lot of junk in there that I never use. And if I ever needed that and it worked, wouldn't that be awesome? And finally, some flyers who travel a lot say, if you fly a lot, how in the world could you be up on an airplane without noise-canceling headphones? So that may not mitigate the entire problem, but it would help some. What do you think about some of those suggestions?
I think they're all great ideas, well thought out, and things that people should consider implementing. The key is to know your child. Know their habits. Know what it is that that calms them down. You know, babies they love to interact with strangers almost at pretty much any age. They see a new face and so forth. So don't hesitate to peek over the back of the seat and give that baby a big grin and a little hello, and you might find that the crying will stop a lot sooner than you might expect. I haven't had a chance. I've had the baby fly here a lot. I haven't had a chance to fly with her, but that's coming soon. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
coming up next, we go international travel with Clayton Whitehead. You're going to love this interview. Next here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, my friends. It's Mark Kaufman and Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Remember now, links to our special guests and so much more can always be found at TravelGuysRadio.com.
Clayton Whitehead joins us here on the Travel Guys this afternoon, and I asked Clayton to join us because international travel is the thing right now.
It is the thing.
For about 6 months to a year after COVID died down, people wanted to go just anywhere, and they weren't so sure about crossing an ocean. So Canada, perhaps Mexico, they were okay with that, maybe an island off the two coasts. But now suddenly, over the last, I would say, 6 to 8 months, folks have gotten more interested in traveling, in going overseas and traveling internationally to those places that they had always dreamed of visiting. And, of course, at Sports Leisure Vacations, we have many senior travelers in our group. So those are folks who lost a couple of years. And so their opportunity to go overseas has been condensed in even a shorter period of time. So, Clayton, your thoughts on international travel and just your observations. Where is it headed right now?
Well, I think the main lesson I learned was way back in high school. Newton's law of something. I can't remember. But it goes like this. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And the action was, actually the action or lack of action, was the pandemic, which just clipped our wings in every possible and imaginable way for so many years. And now suddenly our wings feel relatively unclipped, and everybody is eager to go somewhere. And going somewhere we are. I have trips just in the next few months planned to Scotland and Greece and the Azores. I'm trying to train myself to say that correctly. I've been told it's not the Azores, as Americans say, but the Azores. And then early next year, I already have a sold-out trip to Australia, and I'm planning trips to the Czech Republic, a return trip to Portugal, a trip to Ireland. Everything I put out is selling out. And
why is that, do you think?
I just think that people, you know, they're biological, their life clocks are ticking, and they were told they couldn't go anywhere for the better part of 3 years, and now they're going to go somewhere if it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And we also, but beyond that, our survey work is telling us that people are not only interested in going somewhere, but they're getting a little more specific about where that place is. And we're finding more and more requests for places that are perhaps a little bit off the beaten path, There was a day when any international survey probably would have had Paris at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. That's just a city of light and the city of romance and the city of so many wonderful things. Paris is still on the list. It's still on many people's list, and it remains an extraordinary destination. But it's not at the top of the list anymore. People seem to be looking for places that are a little more off the beaten path, a little more unique, a little more different, and dare I say, places that give them a little better bragging rights when they're sitting at the country club or with friends or whatever, you know, talking about their upcoming plans. I mean, saying that you're going on a wine journey through the Czech Republic definitely has a different ring than saying you're just going to plain old Italy.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid point. Destinations that previously were perhaps passed over. The Czech Republic is an excellent example. And for folks who haven't been there, Prague is one of the most exciting cities on the planet. I can't imagine that the rest of the country doesn't mirror that in some way. And even destinations like the Galapagos Islands have suddenly been showing up on surveys that we've been doing at Sports Leisure Vacations. By the way, we're talking with Clayton Whitehead, president at Sports Leisure Vacations, and we're talking a little bit about international travel today. So, Clayton, do people's interests in international travel seem to be cubbyholed into one area or one type of adventure, or is it just let's go someplace exotic and fun and different?
Well, I'd have to say all of the above. Definitely our travelers are exhibiting a greater interest in going to these less traveled places. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think that might be a residual of COVID as well, even if a subconscious residual that, you know, you think of a place like Rome, you think of a place like London, you think of a place like Paris, you think of lots of people. You know, they're major air hubs and they're big tourism cities. They're big cities without tourists, you know, just with their own native population. So, you know, maybe subconsciously we're thinking, oh, this would be a good place to go to a good time, rather, to go to Eastern Europe. This would be a good time to go to Bavaria again, you know, in the black woods of Germany, the black forest of Germany. This would be a good time to go to Scandinavia, where we have a group as we speak. I think they're just getting off their plane about now.
Yep.
The land of the hobbits. But, you know, places that aren't as crowded and that not as many people are going.
Do you think that people are shifting to these secondary destinations because of a fear that, you know, if something else happens and they might not ever get to go to those places? Or, I mean, are people going down their bucket list and maybe looking at things that are a little bit more secondary than primary?
I think that's probably some of it. Also, a lot of these places are on sale right now. You know, a lot of these places don't have, they weren't perhaps major tourist destinations to begin with. They've just lost 2 or 3 years. They're trying to make up. So a lot of these places are on sale right now, and they're very kind to the American tourist, and they're even kinder to the American dollar. Despite what's happening to our dollar on the international financial markets, there's lots and lots of countries on this planet, dare I say most countries on this planet, that want our dollar, and they will welcome our dollar, and therefore they welcome us. So, you know, we're popular. We also like throwing those dollars around, you know. We're not miserly with our dollars.
For people who are listening, who might be mostly domestic travelers, who are kind of maybe before COVID, they were about to take that plunge and it kind of set them back. And now they're at that spot again where they're kind of ready to take the plunge and go to some more exotic places. What words of wisdom might you have to somebody who's in that spot?
Well, there's a website.
I mean, obviously you're a tour director, so you must feel comfortable taking people to these places, or
I wouldn't personally be going. There's a website that I put a lot of stock in, and it's called Kayak, like the boat, kayak.com. Yeah. It is a search engine for hotel rates and air rates and some other related travel components. And, let's say, like, you're thinking of going to a city like a New Orleans, a Chicago, a city that has a big convention market. You can pick a date, put it in that search engine, and search hotel rates. If you see lots of things that start with the number 5, guess what? You've hit during a big citywide convention. If you see lots of prices that start with the number 1, guess what? You're going at a time when the city is not as crowded and when the city wants business. So you know, that's not rocket science. That's a simple search engine that is open and available to everybody. But I check Kayak a lot because the rates they're showing tell me that either that's a good time to visit that city or that's a bad time to visit that city. And I always think with big cities, a good time is when there aren't as many people there. The prices are going to be better. It's going to be easier to move around. It's going to be easier to hail a cab. It's going to be easier to do everything. So that's my big city advice. For smaller town advice, I love road trips. You know, just get in your car and go somewhere. Or fly to the middle. Fly to Des Moines and rent a car and just go somewhere. And just do a great big drive. Our country is an extraordinary place. And as you know, I'm a big fan of the Midwest anyway, but far too many people just fly over the flyover states. And there's so much beauty and history and the stuff that makes us Americans. You know, it's all over our country, but it's especially in the Midwest. And I think it's especially there because so many of us have missed it. So they have it there in heaping portions, and they just want us to come so they can share their hospitality and their stories with us, and their food, and their scenery.
And themselves.
And themselves.
Having just taken a trip down Route 66 recently here, and you're talking about the center of the country, went from Chicago to Oklahoma City. There's not much more center than that. And I would agree with you. These are folks who are eager to have people come visit them, and they have stories to share. And after all, travel, going to an exotic place and seeing a wonderful sunset or something is a great part of travel. But going to a little town in a small museum and getting into a conversation with somebody about something that you never imagined you would ever be talking to someone, I think also has an incredibly important part of travel. If you're a listener, particularly if you're a sports leisure traveler, and you have an idea for some place that you would like to go, this would be an opportunity. You are going in the next 12 months to Scotland, Greece, and Australia, and checking out Portugal, and those are all places, correct me if I'm wrong, those are all places that were heavily suggested by people who travel with our company, and that's one of the reasons that you made those choices.
Absolutely. In fact, I just wrote my article for our upcoming newsletter on this very point, that we have all of these methods of communication with our travelers and our friends, from end-of-tour evaluations to surveys that we do at various client gatherings, to just conversations we have on the road or when we run into people at Safeway or at church. And all of the things that people say really do get written down and recorded. And we have these great lists all over the office where we keep a tally. The reason Australia was added to the calendar next year is because we did a dream destination survey last year and Australia scored number one. So, okay, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I am a businessman. If a majority of my travelers want to go to Australia, I guess I'm going to Australia. So, just communicate. And for those of you who are listening that are our regular travelers, you know that the early bird gets the worm. And yeah, that's the way it works around here.
Yeah.
We put it out and the worm is gone almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. All right. I'm going to put you on the spot for a second here. You're an international traveler. And we didn't talk about this beforehand, so excuse me if it draws a blank. Tell us one or two of your favorite destinations, places that you would really be eager to take people back to.
The most beautiful place in the world is the Lauterbrunnen Valley in the Bernese Oberland region of Switzerland. It's so pretty. I'm going to cry if I talk about it. I was going to say it's so pretty. It made me cry the first time I saw it, and the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth time. And it's so pretty that remembering it makes me want to cry.
Is it a mountain region? Or?
It is. It's a valley. The Lauterbrunnen Valley is surrounded by, it's in the Alps. Uh-huh. So it's surrounded by enormous mountains. One of them is the Jungfrau, which has the distinction. It's certainly not the tallest mountain in the Alps, but it has the distinction of being the tallest mountain that you and I can go to. There's a train that spirals up through a spiral tunnel in the belly of the mountain that takes you to the very tip top. They call it the top of Europe. And when you're up there, I don't even remember how high you are, you're lightheaded, you're in snow, you're on a glacier, but it's the highest place a normal person can go in all of Europe. And it's just extraordinary. And I'm working on a trip back there, actually, Bavaria and the Swiss Alps, which will be probably late in 24 or 25. Getting space is the big thing. And that's something that should be mentioned. We are not unique in our desire to suddenly go everywhere today. This is a global phenomena. So you're going to find, if you're working on your own or if you're working with a travel expert on your behalf, you're with the exception of maybe the occasional inventory dump or something odd that happens, you're probably not planning travel for the next 3 or 4 months or even 6 months. You might be planning travel for 12 months from now or 15 or 18 or 24 months from now, because that's just what the market is bearing now. Things are, you know, if the hotel only has 100 rooms, well, then it only has 100 rooms. And unless you want to sleep on the lawn out front or in a chair on the porch, you got to wait until one's available. And the waiting time is really growing exponentially all over the world, all over the world.
Clayton Whitehead, president at Sports Leisure Vacations. Clayton, thanks for joining us and sharing some of your thoughts today, particularly on international travel. I know you are headed to Portugal on a scouting trip before too long. You're going to Scotland soon. So we're going to check back in with you after your next journey and see if you have any wisdom to share with folks who are headed out internationally. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Y'all take care.
Thomas, are you an international traveler at all? You ever been overseas?
I have not. I am really a homebody. I traveled the States, but I have not. I do. I would like to see the old country, Italy, where my grandparents grew up and where they came from. That's on my bucket list. I'd like to go to that place that makes Clayton cry five times.
Yeah, just listening to it. I mean, he gets really passionate about some of the places that he really likes. And when you take people to these places and you experience them with folks and you see their reactions to amazingly beautiful or wonderful or unique places. I mean, just on a ghost towns tour of Nevada, taking people into the Clown Motel in Tonopah and watching them get all excited because this is the strangest hotel lobby that they've ever seen in their life. So that's people say, you know, why do you do this? Well, that's why you do it, is because thanks to the generosity of my clients, thanks to the fact that they can afford to do these things, I get to go with them. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty cool – a lot of you may have pretty cool jobs out there, but you may have to go a ways to do as good as mine. Anyways, that's Clayton Whitehead on international travel.
All right. Coming up here on the Travel Guys, Mark's going to talk credit cards, travel awards, and tipping. That's our final segment coming up next right here on the Travel Guys. Happy Father's Day, everyone, from the Travel Guys. Thanks for coming along. Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, is always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacation. And to be redundant, be sure to visit TravelGuysRadio.com. Links to all of our special guests, podcasts, and much more can be found there. All right, Mark, let's talk credit cards, travel awards, and tipping.
Okay, and that's what the script says, but a couple things have come up. One of our listeners wrote in with what I thought was a great idea about babies on planes.
Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah, and she says that what she did for her two children, they're past the toddler age now, but she paid attention to the types of foods that they liked, particularly in a couple, 3 days before they traveled, and she would create a little snack tray with little tiny amounts of, you know, peanuts or cereal or whatever it was that the child liked. And brought that with her. And she said, you would just be amazed how many times that worked. I thought that was a wonderful idea. Amy, thank you for taking the time to share that with us, because I really, really, really appreciate that. That was pretty cool. Tipping. More and more people are encountering these tipping screens at self-service places. And the people who write this programming now are telling us that it's built into the program. So there's not any way for them to get rid of it. Now, I've talked to a couple of computer programmers this week about that answer, and they both told me that that is complete hogwash.
Bogus.
They said there is, in every program, there is a way to be able to display that. Because what's happening is people, especially in airports and the like, now they're creating these self-service kiosks. So you go and you pay, and when you pay, it asks you if you want a tip. Tip who? You know, you pick the thing off the shelf, you ring it up yourself, you put the credit card in the machine. So, but it's just this automatic tipping.
You're tipping
thing.
The business because yeah. It's such a great business. We want to give you more. The price wasn't enough.
No,
I saw one. I had one recently. The lowest category of the tipping started at 18%.
Uh huh.
So my finger quickly went to no tip.
Well, and here's the deal. Half of Americans feel manipulated or tripped into leaving a tip at checkout when presented with a tip screen on a tablet. So the people who do this, obviously, they know this too, that the poll also found that 3/4 of consumers, when they tip on a tablet, don't even know where their tip is going. So to those of you to whom these tips are important, a little clarification is necessary here. If we're tipping on a self-service kiosk, who gets the money? And if we're tipping on a kiosk or the floor is full service, you know, then how is that money being split up? If you want people to tip in those situations because it's important, we need a little bit of explanation. Okay, if you're wondering, best credit card reward programs, for the 7th year in a row, Capital One has the top spot. Capital One's strengths include offers for people across the spectrum, consumer-friendly earning policies, and great rewards value through per $1 spent, says the Wallet Hub analyst who shares that information. Here is a really interesting story. Do you think that companies are going to voluntarily tell the truth about their prices? Airbnb and Ticketmaster had a meeting at the White House with the president and some of his staff, trying to convince them, of course, that legislation is not needed because people are being seriously overcharged for concert tickets, and Airbnb has a whole set of problems in regards to customer relations that they don't want legislated. And so they went to the White House to plead their case. Let's hope that that doesn't really work. We talked earlier in the program about price disclosure for accommodations. They asked consumers, Wallet Hub did, which should we legislate price disclosure? 96% of people who travel say yes, we should legislate price, that we should be, people should know what the price is. When they go on the first screen and they see the price, that should be the same price that's on the last screen. So there you are, just a bunch of wrapping up a bunch of little things. Oh, and my staff member, Tyler, whose suitcase was lost, we were talking about this. United Airlines asked him for his expenses on Monday and said in 4 to 6 weeks, perhaps you'll get a check. Imagine that.
Wow. All right. Well, that's about it for the Travel Guys for today.
Always leaving town. You never